Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Payton Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Big one for the Astros today. McCullers versus Cole. And you know, Seth, I'm not here to say that a game on May 6th is a must-win game, but damn it, this is a must-win game. Because I can't deal with Yankee fans being able to hold a early season sweep over our heads for the next couple of months.
They don't can I make a suggestion to Dusty Baker?
Yes.
Who was a little bit testy in the pre-game presser yesterday.
He was.
Brian McTaggart asked him, hey, why is Tucker sitting? Like, basic question, right? And Dusty basically said, hey, am I going to have to answer like every time I do this? Are you going to ask this question every time I do something like this? And McTaggart was polite about it, but my thought would be, yeah, he's just asking why you sitting Tucker. And Dusty ended up eventually saying he's been struggling a little bit lately. Diaz, playing right field in Yankee Stadium is easier than in some places because it's a short right field. Like, he gave a good answer, but like, of course you're going to get that question,
right?
Especially when people have been clamoring for Tucker to take a rest for quite some time now.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Dusty, you don't have enough pelts on the wall as the Astros manager to be able to get testy on basic questions like that.
Although one of our... No, I saw this on Twitter. I didn't write the guy's name down. He basically made the point is one of the best things that Dusty's done this year, at the very least, is that it seems like because broadcasters like Dusty Baker, they like kind of give the Astros a little bit more of a pass, perhaps, when they're talking about the Astros. They'll bring up things that Dusty Baker said. So there's for whatever that's worth, if it eases your brain a little bit. I'm going to tell you this, Sean. I watched the Yankees broadcast for the first. I watched right at the beginning and then the first inning of the Yankees broadcast yesterday. And for whatever it's worth, they were less biased than the ESPN broadcast in favor of the Yankees.
Are you serious?
I actually felt like the Yankees broadcast. Like they mentioned Altuve in the pregame. They mentioned Altuve and said, you know, he's become the face of this scandal. Whether that's fair or not, that's up for debate. And then they mentioned, you know, when he was at the plate, his first time that, like, hey, look, scandal or not, he's a really, really good hitter. Like, they actually, and this would make sense, I guess, because maybe they've had more time and think more about it than guys like Carl Ravitch.
Yes.
They just seem more informed about the actual scandal, and they weren't bringing up as many kind of sneering references to it as I expected. So I have a grudging kudos to the Yankees broadcast, especially compared to Ravitch and those guys.
Yeah, that I think, as you described that, Seth, that's to me, I think that's probably what it is like anything that you talk about and obsess over, there's fatigue at some point. You know, the Yankees have been talking about this, I would imagine, much more than ESPN and Carl Ravitch have over the course of the last year and a half. So they've come to a level of acceptance where for Ravitch and them, it's almost like, oh, we finally get to pull out our toys that we've been waiting to use all this time.
Right. I've been making a joke about, wait for it, Trashstros. I've been waiting to make that joke for some time.
I get to use it.
At some point, I'm going to talk about how it's harder to hit the ball
when
you don't know what's coming. Yeah. So so there's that. I agree with that. And the other thing I've noticed, too, in this Yankees series is all the casual Yankees fans who don't understand or realize that this isn't the first series of the season. That, yeah, these guys have been booed before.
Yeah.
Like this, there are a lot of Yankees fans acting like this is the first time Altuve's ever been booed.
Right.
You know, this season. It's really, really weird. Now, it's definitely, I don't know. The Angels were pretty aggressive early on. The Yankees have lost a little bit of their enthusiasm for it, partly because of weather conditions last night. But it is, to give them, I guess, credit for it, it has been the loudest and the most aggressive with the Yankees, but it's not like this is the first time that they've been booed.
Maybe we haven't noticed this too much because the Astros are still a decent hitting baseball team, but apparently around the rest of baseball, it's starting to get quite boring watching hitters. Did you see this stuff in The Athletic about baseball had its lowest batting average ever in April so far?
It's by a long shot.
Yeah.
And it's since, I think in the headline it said like since 1968, but it was actually way worse than that. 1968 would be the second worst April ever after this 2021 one. And for a while they thought it was because of the dead ball, perhaps. The quote-unquote dead ball. Turns out the ball is actually a lot more like the ball from 2016, 17, and 18.
Okay.
It's just in 2019 when the thing was just popping off the bat like it was hopped up on amphetamines or something.
Yeah.
Like it had just snorted a line of Ritalin before it came to the ballpark. It's a little bit back to normal. So that's not it. And around the league, one of the big things that they're crediting is just the flat out, the fact that the pitchers have just gotten so good. The training is so much better. The substances that they're using, whatever they are, have just created so much movement. And a lot of people said it's just never been harder to hit than right now.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem for baseball. Well, I say that's going to be a problem for baseball. People can't get it right when it comes to complaining about baseball because on the one end, people are like, well, all this, there's no hitting going on. So you know what? Like, it's going to be real boring to watch all these strikeouts and these pitchers. And then the same people go, well, what do you, when you ask them, well, what else do you hate about baseball? Well, the games are too long. Like, okay, well, it's, you can't have offense and have the games be shorter. You know what I mean? You got to choose one.
You know what they said in that article is that Theo Epstein is one of the guys who kind of quietly in the shadows is working on some of these steps to improve baseball. And I went, like, there are a lot of people right now that are saying, there's nothing wrong with baseball. It's fine. This is how it's always been. That's a lie. Because when you fell in love with baseball, like if you're 40 or 50 or 60 years old right now, when you fell in love with baseball, the games were in actuality much, much shorter than they are right now.
Yeah.
So trying to change the game has changed a lot from the game that you fell in love with. I mean, including the way pitchers are used especially, that's way different. So I never quite get this knee-jerk response that you don't need to fix baseball. People just need to start having better attention spans. You go back to like the 1920s, 30s, and 40s, and your average game was a little over 2 hours. You know, like, so it's not like they had just such freakishly long attention spans that they wanted a 3.5 hour baseball game. The games were a lot shorter back then. And some of the stuff's not going away. TV timeouts and all that, obviously.
Right.
But there are, one of the things that's making the rounds a little bit is moving the mound back 1 foot or moving the rubber back 1 foot.
Yeah. I've heard that. I've heard that there was one of the minor leagues looking at doing it.
And I'm thinking
to myself, I don't know if I'd want my players playing in that minor league where they're throwing pitches. They're playing on a field with different dimensions.
They're going to have to adjust to. Yeah, it'd be like if you had a basketball team and in the D league they were playing with a 10-foot, 6-inch rim.
Right.
And then all of a sudden your guy gets called up and his shot's all off.
Yeah, as he's hitting the side of the backboard and stuff.
You know, they did an interesting study with that to figure out whether it might make guys more injury prone or not. Mm. And one of the things they did was because various guys, depending on how they set up and how they pitch and everything, are throwing the ball further away or shorter or what have you. Mm-hmm. It was based on where the batters line up in the batter's box.
Okay.
But the pitchers are still throwing the same distance. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, now that I'm thinking about that part of the article, it didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So, and now the other big thing is that guys are just swinging for home runs all the time.
Yeah.
So
yes. The launch angle and everything else.
Yeah, yeah. In April, you had the largest difference between strikeouts and hits ever in a single month in baseball. So there were 1,096 more strikeouts than hits in the month of April. And you might say, Seth, is that really bad? The second worst ever was 705.
Holy
smokes.
In September
of 2019. Yeah, and all the four worst have all been since 2019. But, yeah, as much as the game changed in 2019, it's over 300, over almost 400 more strikeouts compared to hits than in 2019.
Holy cow, that's wild. That is wild. I guess George Springer's not going to play this weekend. So Astro fans,
quadriceps.
Yeah. So Astro fans who are looking to boo George Springer for leaving us, you'll have to aim your boos at the Blue Jay dugout. You won't be able to do it in center field.
How many people would there be? I guess you could put an over under on number of individuals in Minute Maid Park who would have booed George Springer.
Yeah.
I think it's just like just as a gag, as a drunken like kind of just pranker, just to be obnoxious. Maybe, like, do you think 3.5 is the over-under?
A number of people?
A total number of people,
yeah. That's exactly. The funny thing was, that was the number rattling around in my head. 3.5
people. It's easier to identify them, too. Like, I don't think it would be in a crowd, somebody would do it more as a joke, yep, or, like, do it on a lark, I think. Where when you've got more sporadic it's easier to see exactly and isolate the person who's booing, so I don't think there will be that much of it. Would have been that much of it.
Was Davis Mills a winner or a loser on Friday night? We'll make the case for each next. All right, is Davis Mills a winner or a loser? Was he on Friday night? Because the Texans drafted him with the 67th overall pick. There are arguments to be made on both sides, and in fact, CBS argues Davis Mills winner. Yahoo Sports argues Davis Mills loser. So, Seth, I'm going to put forth these arguments,
okay,
and you be the judge. You tell me who makes a better argument for their case, winner or loser, Davis Mills, and then obviously curious what you categorize him as, getting drafted by the Texans 67th overall, quarterback out of Stanford. CBS says winner, Davis Mills. Out of all the quarterbacks that came off the board on day two, he may have the clearest path to a starting job. Getting an opportunity to hit the field is half the battle. Trask is going to be behind Brady. Mond is going to be playing behind Kirk Cousins.
That would be a great idea in theory. The first guy I thought of was Cody Kessler to the Browns in 2016,
mm-hmm,
where, hey, you've got an easy path to starting. Here's the catch. You might not have the best opportunity to show what you can do as a starter. I think what perhaps Mills has that Cody Kessler did not is that I feel okay about this offensive line right now. There's still questions at center and left guard, don't get me wrong. But even at center, you know, center is very uncertain, but the guy that wins the job is going to end up being a center with starting experience and who's played competently in the NFL. I mean, that's who Xeria went and is found a bunch of interior offensive linemen that have some issues and question marks, but they're going to be competent football players. It's just a matter of which one of them can stay healthy. And then left guard, we'll see. I've still got hopes that Max Sharping is going to be all right. So between that, having David Johnson, I'm as down on David Johnson and bringing back David Johnson as the next guy. In terms of helping out a young quarterback, it does help to have a guy that knows what the hell he's doing in pass protection and who's a threat as a receiver out of the backfield still. Like, David Johnson as a runner hasn't shown me much at all, but I think there is still potential for him as a receiver. So he's in a position to start, and I don't think it will necessarily be as bad as a guy like Cody Kessler was to the Browns in 2016.
No, I totally agree with that. And a couple, just following up on a couple of the points you just made, the offensive line, Seth, addition by subtraction, they're going to be better coached. Like, by definition, they will be better coached. Campin is going to be, a better position coach than Mike Devlin was. So addition by subtraction from that standpoint. And then as far as the running backs go, it's not just David Johnson. You know, before it was David Johnson, they didn't trust Duke Johnson, obviously. So you're one injury away from Buddy Howell getting touches.
Yeah,
you know, now they've at least got some depth. You know, Philip Lindsay has had some quality carries in the league. Mark Ingram has had some quality carries in the league, both recently.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, Sean, because it's not – David Johnson has just emblazoned in my brain because of everything that's happened in the last 15 months.
Sure.
But it's a platoon of three – either aging and or injury prone guys at any given time. Who knows who the quote unquote bell cow is going to be? But all three of those guys have experience.
And
that's a big deal for a rookie quarterback, having somebody you can trust in the backfield to help you with the pass protection.
All right. So CBS says winner Davis Mills, and that's the case they put forth. Yahoo Sports says loser Davis Mills.
Yeah.
And here's what they say. Whereas Trask enters the NFL in perhaps an ideal situation, Mills already finds himself at the center of a mess with the Houston Texans. The Stanford signal caller likely isn't ready for any substantial role early in his career after making just 11 starts in college. Yet Houston can't really commit to any path amid the uncertainty of Deshaun Watson's future. Even if the star quarterback and the franchise make a clean break, this hardly seems like the right atmosphere for a young signal caller to properly develop. They are painting the Texans, Seth, like the Browns Cody Kessler situation that you just outlined a minute ago.
Right. And I think just in any quarterback situation with a third round quarterback, I would tend to agree with the second statement the most, that if you're drafting a guy in the third round, there's a reason you're drafting him in the third round. Mm-hmm. Guys who are ready to play in the NFL immediately get drafted in the first round. So yes, some guys work out, some guys don't. In the case of Russell Wilson, remember, Russell Wilson had his legs. He had a rushing attack that included Marshawn Lynch. He had a really good defense on the other side of him. So he didn't have to do all of the things that a developmental third-round quarterback would have to do. It took Russell Wilson 3 or 4 years to really develop into an actual NFL quarterback. And by that time, okay, then he didn't have to have the rushing attack and the defense necessarily to be a good quarterback. We know, look, Davis Mills, Sean, I don't mean to trash the kid, but he definitely does not have the legs of a Russell Wilson. So, and does he have the – I would prefer to see him not play this year. I'd love to see Tyrod Taylor play a whole bunch. But then you run into the crunch of, okay, the Texans probably going to draft the quarterback pretty high next year.
Yeah.
So where exactly does Davis Mills fit in? So it doesn't, for Davis Mills specifically, is this the best spot for him? Probably not. Like, ultimately, Kyle Trask does have the best position because he can sit, he can learn behind Tom Brady, he can get to know Byron Leftwich, who I'm guessing has a good chance of succeeding Bruce as the owner of the,
the head coach, Bruce Arians.
Bruce Arians is not going to be the owner of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, yeah, I think that Kyle Trask would be in a better situation than Davis Mills.
But overall, you think winner, if you had to categorize winner or loser, they're not really, when they say winner or loser, they're not really saying anything about Davis Mills in terms of evaluating him.
Yeah.
They're talking about the situation he's coming into.
I would say overall winner in that it's not, if he has to play, if he's pressed into action, especially early, he'll get a pass for being on a bad team, but I don't think the pass protection situation is nearly as bad as a lot of people just kind of have. People have a knee-jerk reaction right now where they look at the Texans, they say, well, everything must be awful at every single position. Texans' offensive line and pass protection last year did some good things. Their run blocking was porous and trash and awful. It looked discombobulated. Looked like guys either didn't know or didn't care what they were supposed to do. The run blocking was really, really bad. But the actual pass protection, I think there's hope for improvement over last year, and last year it wasn't actually all that bad.
Yeah. Other winners and losers relevant to the Texans. Greg Rosenthal, who covers the NFL, I believe for NFL.com, said that Texans draft day communication was a loser. McClain brought this up yesterday, and it sounded like McClain painted a picture where there's been a misconception about this. According to Pete Schrager of the NFL Network, Davis Mills had no idea he was the selection until he saw his name called on TV. If Mills was on Twitter, he could have learned that he was possibly the Texans' new quarterback of the future a few minutes earlier, because guys are spoiling picks on Twitter if you want to do that. Now, so it paints a picture of where the Texans are making these picks but not calling the player. And McClain said, well, one thing that people need to understand is they had called Davis Mills during the second round to tell him, if you're there, we're taking you. If you're there when we pick, we're taking you.
Yeah, which, by the way, conflicts with what somebody else had. Somebody else had told us, or I guess I saw somewhere that they thought the Texans liked Kellen Mond.
I had heard from behind the scenes that from somebody who talked to Mond's camp.
Yeah.
That they were under the impression that the Texans would have taken Kellen Mond if he were there. I don't know if that's 100% true or not, but you're right. When McClain said that yesterday, Seth, that they called him in the second round, if that's true, then that would indicate that the Texans were looking at taking him over Trask or Mond.
Sometimes.
Or they were lying to him.
Well, yeah. Or sometimes wires get crossed. I was talking to the Cowboys defensive line coach during the draft the year I got drafted, and he told me in the third round that, hey, you're the last defensive tackle that we really think is worth drafting. So if you're there when we pick, we're going to take you either with our last pick in the third round or the first pick in the fourth round. And I can't remember if it was with the last pick in the third round or the first pick in the fourth round, but they ended up taking a defensive tackle out of Syracuse, who also, by the way, ended up sucking. So, yeah.
Was that the chip on your shoulder that got you a 10-year career, them drafting that Syracuse dude?
No, I got it. It was a kid that had injury issues. Is Antonio Anderson? Was that his name? And to his credit, the Cowboys defensive line coach called me up afterwards and said that, hey, we had written Antonio Anderson off. Like, we had taken him off the board because of injury concerns, and at the last moment, the owner said, no, let's go with the big guy out of Syracuse instead of this kid I've never heard of.
You got Jerry Jones'd?
Yeah, out of Cornell, yeah. Oh,
man.
I used it as a little bit of a chip whenever I would go to play the Cowboys.
Right.
Yeah. That was the one thing. Look, there were too many defensive tackles that went in front of me for me to remember, like, every single one in all their draft positions or anything. But I did remember being lied to by the Cowboys on draft day.
Antonio Anderson played 21 games in the NFL.
Yeah. And he had Good job, Cowboys. It's a hell of a pick. Really smart move by you.
He had an approximate value of 4, according to Pro Football Reference, whereas Seth Payne, who was the 114th pick in the draft, played in 121 games with an approximate value of 48.
Jeez, is 12 times better than the guy? Was that a better?
That's how I like to look at it.
The fact that I was 12 times better than him, is that probably a good indication that maybe they should have taken me?
Hell yeah, it is.
Go screw yourselves, Cowboys.
You're funnier, too.
Yeah, but I don't have a chip on my shoulder.
Yeah.
So that can happen, and there you go.
Yeah, all right. 713-572-4610 if you want to give us a call or give us a text, you can do that. Aaron Rodgers, we've not hit Aaron Rodgers yet today. That is still the big story around the NFL. The issue with Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers seems to boil down to one simple thing. We will tell you what it is next. Just to refresh, Terry Bradshaw had some things to say about Aaron Rodgers on our sister station, WFAN, earlier this week. Here's what the Hall of Famer had to say.
I don't understand why he's so upset at Green Bay. And then if they fire the general manager, he'll come back. Are you kidding me? Really? Aaron, that's where this is. Here's what I'd do. I wouldn't budge. Let him gripe. Let him cry. Retire. You're 38. Go ahead and retire. See you later. I mean, I'm really strong about stuff like that, and it just makes him look weak. In my way of looking, it makes him look weak.
All right, so that's Terry Bradshaw. He's saying he would just, you know, basically get into a staring contest with Aaron Rodgers and not flinch.
Is there – I think there's part of Aaron Rodgers' whole deal where it's almost like he's Kevin Durant without the social media. I feel like if Aaron Rodgers were on social media or active on it, then he would completely and totally be like Kevin Durant. There's a certain thin-skinnedness about him that where you say, like, why are you so thin-skinned? You're so awesome. And yet maybe being thin-skinned is part of what makes them tick and motivates them and does all that. So, yeah, I actually agree with Bradshaw when he says that it makes him look weak only in a way that we already knew Aaron Rodgers was kind of pouty and kind of a diva about stuff, you know, and kind of thin-skinned about things. So this is just confirmation of it more than it making him look like it. Because there's also that. There's a part of me that says, yeah, look, Aaron, this is the hard thing to accept sometimes. Okay, did they disrespect you by drafting your replacement? Kind of in a way, but it was also just a weird use of resources. Like, it was more that strategically, it was just a weird and dumb thing to do, given how little they've done to actually try to bolster the offense the entire time he's been there. So there's two sides. There's strategic misstep, over the course of a decade, and then also just Aaron Rodgers taking offense to it. But if Aaron Rodgers being honest with himself, he's got to admit that it was extra motivation. It doesn't mean that, look, maybe he would have had an MVP season regardless, just because it was going to be his second year in that system and things would have been, it would have worked out that way. But no matter who you are as a human being, when somebody challenges you by doing something like that, it's going to make you work a little bit harder, at the very least. But it's, Sean, it's hard sometimes to accept that or admit that when you're the person.
Sure.
Like I got drafted, when Marcus Stroud got drafted to the Jaguars, I was a starting defensive tackle, and Gary Walker was a Pro Bowl defensive tackle next to me, and it motivated the hell out of me. I don't know if I would have actually admitted that that was the reason I ended up having like my best year ever the next year, because your ego and your pride won't allow you to
sure.
do it. You're just like, no, I have always worked hard, and I've got a good work ethic, and no, it had nothing to do with it. When truth be told, yeah, it actually it motivates the hell out of you. It's like every day you're thinking about wanting to – you're thinking about wanting to prove your coach is wrong and everything. And I think that worked for Aaron Rodgers. But Aaron Rodgers at some point, because honestly, Aaron Rodgers thinking that somehow he's going to go to Denver behind that trash offensive line and somehow it's going to be better than in Green Bay, it's not so simple and it's not so easy. You got a really good thing going. Maybe you don't like the way the GM operates, but it's not so simple as just throwing all that away because you got your feelings hurt.
Yeah.
I would agree more with Terry Bradshaw than maybe you would suspect. On the contractual side of things, like yeah, it's hard for teams to actually say you're going to sit and play.
Yeah.
When a guy that's willing to actually take the financial hit will sit out the entire year.
Right.
That's the big difference. If it's just somebody who's disgruntled but doesn't have that kind of leverage because they need the money or because they just won't follow through on it, then that's different. It's easier to be a hard ass with that guy.
Yeah.
When it's a quarterback who's such a huge part of your plans and he's willing to sit out, that becomes a little tougher.
Yeah, I think, I read a couple of these articles yesterday, Seth, on Aaron Rodgers. You know, Rob Domofsky of ESPN had one. There was one on Bleacher Report that had some interesting factoids. Bob McGinn had one on The Athletic. It's a huge topic, obviously. And the common thread through all these articles about Aaron Rodgers, people who talk to people behind the scenes, is sounds like the source of this whole thing is similar to the Deshaun Watson situation, in that just the breakdown in communication between management and the player. You know, that Aaron Rodgers, and I don't know that he would have reacted any better had they told him they were drafting Jordan Love, but he found out with the rest of us that they were that they were drafting Jordan Love. You know what I mean? Like that. Gutekunst could have been doing that because he just, not communicating with Rodgers because he's like, why do I want to have that conversation? It sounds like it's going to be very unpleasant.
The whole part about how somehow it would be better if you let the guy know ahead of time, I understand the thinking about that, but it's a little bit like some guy telling you he's about to sleep with your wife. Like, that doesn't help at all, buddy. If anything, yeah. I feel a little bit more insulted.
Yeah.
You know? It's just okay. Be gentle, I suppose. What's Aaron Rodgers supposed to say when they say that?
Well, and I think, too, they brought up the fact that Jordy Nelson getting let go, and there's another receiver who, Kumerow, I think is his name. Like, Aaron Rodgers was mad that they let Kumerow go. I'm like, okay, this is where we are. Like,
Aaron Rodgers was upset when they fired Alex Van Pelt without telling him, or they let Alex Van Pelt go.
Yeah, I mean,
Alex Van Pelt, a man who once, after starting as a backup quarterback for the Buffalo Bills, admitted afterwards that he didn't know the game plan all that
well.
Or no, it was that he got pressed into action during the game, and then he said afterwards he didn't know the game plan all that well.
You know, it's funny, when you brought up the drafting of Jordan Love lighting a fire under Aaron Rodgers, putting a chip on his shoulder, and he became MVP of the league this year, and he's been MVP before, but it's funny, if you can take the emotion out of it, right? If you can take the emotion out of drafting Jordan Love and what it represents, just purely from a functional standpoint, it's almost like they used a first-round pick to, I don't think Gutekunst, I don't think this was his intent, but an unintended consequence of him drafting Jordan Love was Aaron Rodgers raising the level of his play. And if you just look at it purely quantitatively, you go, okay, well, if you're the Packers, if someone had said, you need to give up your first-round pick, but Aaron Rodgers is going to become the MVP of the league, you would make that trade. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's
right.
One way to look at it. Like, if what Jordan Love represents is motivation for Aaron Rodgers. It took his game from an A-minus to an A-plus for a year. You would trade. You would make that trade.
That's where, and that's where when Bradshaw says, you know, as the team, you could say, yeah, it's tough. You got to deal with it. I wonder if the, I think the Packers may have known this was going to be coming and that there would be turmoil. But with Aaron Rodgers, who really, what people need to realize is that for several years, Aaron Rodgers had been playing like a very average quarterback in a lot of respects. You know, he was still making incredible plays, don't get me wrong, but his overall performance had not been all that impressive. And you can blame part of it on Mike McCarthy 2 years ago. You could blame it on being the new scheme and what have you, but he just was not the same guy. So I think that two things can be true. One, they were drafting Jordan Love because maybe Aaron Rodgers was one of these guys that was not going to age well into his 40s. And two, to motivate Aaron Rodgers, and that maybe there would be turmoil afterwards. But if you think about Aaron Rodgers, and sometimes what this is what personnel people and coaches worry about with intelligent football players, like guys who are pretty bright, guys who have interests off the field, all those things. Some of this is overblown, but I'm just telling you, this is what they worry about. It's they worry about their motivation, their distraction levels. Are they going to get bored? Like all these things. And I think with Aaron Rodgers, who kind of fits, he kind of fits that personality type of a guy who's a really bright guy, has off the field interest. Maybe starts to get bored with football when he gets into his mid 30s. Cause frankly, it's a blue collar job at the end of the day. You know, it's working an assembly line. And if you don't want to be that janitor who's actually a math genius and hates the world because of it. But that's a little bit of like a Goodwill Hunting scenario you get with a guy like Aaron Rodgers. And I think the Packers management knew that. And that was one of my pet theories from the very moment they traded up for Jordan Love, was that, okay, this is probably at least partially a way to motivate Aaron Rodgers too. All right. Now, they'll never say it to Aaron Rodgers because you get very hissy about it if they suggested that he needed to be motivated.
Okay, some numbers to back up your point. It's interesting. Seth, in 2014, we remember well 2014, Aaron Rodgers winning the MVP. We remember it here in Houston. Why? Because J.J. Watt was the runner-up that year. J.J. Watt got a bunch of votes for MVP that year. So Aaron Rodgers was the MVP of the league. That was the last time before this past season that he was first-team All-Pro. His passer rating that year was 112.2. In four of the next five, first of all five seasons after that, his passer rating was well below 112.2. In four of those five seasons, up until last year, it was under 100. Which, you know, for a quarterback like Aaron Rodgers, you know, and for his whole career, he'd been above 100. Hell, he led the league in passer rating a couple of times in previous seasons, not including his MVP year. And their record, 10-6. He was injured 1 year, only 4-3. They were 6-9-1 with a fully healthy Aaron Rodgers when Mike McCarthy got fired. So you're right. His performance had dipped until last year. Passer rating, 121.5. He was ridiculous last year. Ridiculous.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers, just take a guess, honestly, and you know it's going to be lower than the top five. Where was Aaron Rodgers in total QBR in 2019?
In 2019.
Where do you think he ranked?
I'm going to say probably 15th, middle of the
20th.
Pack. 20th.
Yeah, 20th. Yeah.
Wow.
In 2019.
Well, and they went 13-3, by the way. That's
wild. I know. No, in 2018, he was 16th.
Yeah.
You know, this last year, he was first, I believe.
Yeah.
I mean, like, those don't tell the whole story. But in terms of him being an incredible quarterback or even just a guy who was driving towards a bunch of wins, he was not the same guy the last few years that he ended up being in 2020. So that's where ultimately, I don't know if all of this ends up getting resolved. Maybe the Packers say, all right, you know what? We knew we were playing with fire. And if we got to fire Gutekunst, we fire Gutekunst. Sorry about it, Gutekunst. We'll give you a nice golden parachute on your way out because you reinvigorated our quarterback here. But the problem is then, is he also going to demand that you get rid of Jordan Love? Like, does Aaron Rodgers extinguish the flame that had been lit under him with the drafting of Jordan Love? And then he just goes back to being himself.
Boy, that's a slip. That firing a GM because a star player demands it in the NFL of all leagues, that's a slippery slope, man.
I don't think that it, I don't think that it hasn't happened before. It's just not necessarily always publicized.
No, I know, but so, I mean, this is. But I think there's going to be quarterbacks now who feel like, well, you know, look, I mean, it's going to get more publicized going forward now. You know,
Does Aaron Rodgers even pull this stunt if Russell Wilson and Deshaun Watson hadn't paved the way? You know, this quarterbacks demanding trades is a pretty new phenomenon in the NFL. This is not a common occurrence, and now it's happened three times in one season.
Yeah,
three times in one offseason.
Yeah, I know your question, I think, was rhetorical there. Would Aaron Rodgers have done it if Wilson and Watson hadn't paved the way? I'm going to say yes, just because of Aaron Rodgers' personality. You know what I mean? And he's 37 years old. You know, like Deshaun doing it at 25 is a holy bleep moment. Aaron Rodgers doing this is not, you know, and you're right. Maybe we would be reacting differently if there were other quarterbacks who hadn't done it. I just think Aaron Rodgers' personality type would indicate to me, I don't think he needed the road paved for him to do this.
Well, I mean, precedent does matter, you know, and it's maybe he would have thought about doing that or what have you. But if he really had the balls to be the first to do it, then he would have done it already. He would have done it last year. But Deshaun Watson has much larger testicles than him.
Indeed. Did you?
Unfortunately, apparently.
Moving on. Did you see that he being Aaron Rodgers, refers to Gutekunst as Jerry Krause in the group chat?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but except here's the problem, Aaron Rodgers. The Bulls actually won many, many championships.
They did, six of them.
Before Jerry Krause's ego got to him.
Yeah.
And Gutekunst wasn't actually the guy in charge when you guys won your single Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
So it feels weird. It feels weird trying to insult somebody by saying you've only got one Super Bowl victory. But with Aaron Rodgers, I think the thought at the time was, wow, one of many to come. It's like Pat Mahomes right now. After Aaron Rodgers won his first Super Bowl, it was kind of how people are with Pat Mahomes right now.
Yes,
yes. You're like, wow, look at this duo. Yep. Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers to the moon and beyond.
Yeah, shut it down, NFC. We know who's making the Super Bowl from your side for the next decade, and they have not been back. They've not been back to the Super Bowl since then.
My favorite short-sighted sports fan take is when it always feels that way. I'm including myself in it. It feels like a situation will never change. Like when LeBron James in Miami, it was, you know, wow, for the next decade, who's going to beat the Miami Heat? And then all of a sudden, and now people were saying that in the year where LeBron was going to be a free agent.
Right.
That he could opt out. And then, let's see, Pat Mahomes, I think like that's completely happened. Any young quarterback, remember, like, who's ever, actually, Sean, it was less than 2 years ago that people were wondering how on earth any team was ever going to beat the Baltimore Ravens for the rest of all time in history.
Yeah. 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 Seth, they just had, you might have missed it on the TV, but they just had on TV, what are the chances of the Buccaneers going undefeated this season? And I feel like reminding you, they weren't world beaters. And I mean, they had a nice playoff run and they were amazing against the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. But going really like this, we're talking about this team going. They were 11-5 in the regular season.
Yes, yes, they are talking about that because they do this every year. Oh, this is like from now through July, Sean. They know what they're doing. Yeah. Every single year, ESPN will run a few times. Yeah. Hey, will this team go undefeated? And then people get irate about it and point out how hard it actually is to go undefeated, and it gets turned into a talking point somehow.
Let's do headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Hey, real quick, before we get to headlines, Seth, how would you feel if you were Aaron Rodgers and you knew that somebody in your group text was leaking stuff you were saying on the group text? Do you think he was cool with it? Do you think he was like, hey, you know what? Go tell McGinn that I call him Jerry Krause on the group text. Or is Aaron Rodgers going, who is the rat that's telling people this is a group text, this is supposed to stay private? Do you think Aaron Rodgers is mad that his insults of Brian Gutekunst got out there in the
I don't know if
the reporting realm, or do you think he was calculated?
I think Aaron Rodgers might know exactly which things are being leaked and how and when, so
he green-lighted it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't, like, because who's going to leak that necessarily that isn't given permission from? Because who is he texting? Sean. No, that's definitely an approved leak by Aaron Rodgers, because if Aaron Rodgers is texting that to a friend, Like, that friend, it's not like that friend's going to be able to secretly say, hey, by the way, no, Aaron, it wasn't me.
Well, no, but Seth, it's a group text, though. So there's more than, you know, there's more than two people on it. So
yeah, but it's still going to put that person under suspicion, or that whole, like, anybody in that group under suspicion. So, yeah, I think that's an approved leak.
Okay, all right. Astros.
Also, somebody pointing out that we were defending Deshaun Watson for this tactic just a few months ago. I would say that I 100% approve of players using their leverage. So this is I'm walking a fine line here. I think Aaron Rodgers is petulant, and I think he holds a grudge, and I think he's a diva. But I also think it's kind of cool when players just swing a big stick when they have it. Also, please, please tell me. Maybe it's not apparent to me. Maybe you can figure it out.
I know what you're going to
say. What's the difference between the Green Bay Packers and the Houston Texans right now? See if you can find one. See if you can find a difference between those two scenarios.
Yeah,
thanks. You can get back to me later.
Right, right. Yeah, it's called 9 games in the standings. That's what it's called. Come on now. Stop. Stop it. All right. Astros. They fell to 500 on the season. When they got above 500 finally, I said, there's no going back. They ain't falling below 500. Now they got to get through Gerrit Cole today to make sure they don't fall back below 500. They've now lost 3 in a row. They lose to the Yankees last night, 6-3. And in a rainy game at New Yankee Stadium up there. So now, Seth, they try to avoid the sweep. Hey, man, this is what you're paying Lance McCullers for. Unfortunately, in New York, they're saying this is what we're paying Gerrit Cole for. I say all that to say this should be a fun afternoon of baseball today. Lance McCullers versus Gerrit Cole for the Astros to try to avoid the sweep.
What time is this game on? Is it 1 o'clock?
It's 12:10 Central Time, first pitch.
Noonish?
Noonish.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Last night, I'm going to be honest with you, I had a hard time staying awake last night, even though it's an early game. By our standards, but noon, I've got no excuse.
Okay, I had a hard time staying awake too, but it was because I soaked my brain in alcohol for Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, Sean, that's not going to sleep. That's called passing out. There's
a
difference.
Right, I passed out.
Low in REMs today.
I passed out on the couch in front of the TV, and Amy evidently tried to wake me up 3 times.
Yeah,
and apparently I was very ornery because I woke up to this text. From Amy, she said, I'm in here completely awake, fully showered, tried to wake you 3 times, and you were rude to me, so I'm going to sleep. I love you. I love you. Good night. I'll wake you. I love you. Good night. I'll wake you in the morning. Okay.
You got the fully showered.
I did.
Go ahead.
I did.
Man,
I did.
What the hell?
And I'm gone for the next 3 days too. So connect the dots right there. So I came in and I apologized. I said, boy, I apologize if I was rude when you tried to wake me up. I don't remember that at all. She said, yeah, the third time I went in to try to wake you up, you said to me, you got angry with me and said they can just shower in the cabin. And I said, I don't know what that means. Apparently, I was having a dream of somebody showering in a cabin. So,
maybe it was Brooks Raley and Joe Smith. They might as well have been with the deluge out there last night. And then, I was surprised she couldn't get you aroused with the possibility of a Joe Smith appearance.
Right, right. Yeah. Exactly. So, anyways, that was my night last night.
This bullpen. The bullpen isn't the worst bullpen in the league. Yeah. It's about middle of the road. It's, I think, 9th in the AL right now in bullpen ERA. But it certainly isn't championship caliber bullpenage.
No.
Not by a long shot. And I'm just wondering, whatever happened to Kent Emanuel? Like, are we going to be watching one of those VH1 specials 20 years from now where there'll be a little thing about, like, hey, Kent Emanuel is a guy that showed up for the Astros once, a couple times in April, and then we never saw him again.
Did he do anything to get put outside the circle of trust of Dusty Baker?
I don't know. I mean, they said that they originally, remember when he was potentially going to start the game that you and I went to?
Yeah, yeah, and they started Luis Garcia. And Garcia
was good.
They started
Luis Garcia because they said that Kent Emanuel matched up better for the Yankees, and then boom, nothing, poof.
Nothing,
gone.
Yeah. Let's see, he's 1-0 with a 1.69 ERA. He's appeared in 3 games, pitched 10 2/3 innings. One of them was 8 2/3 inning appearance. So, I guess the last couple times, he gave up those 2 runs. Yeah, come on, Dusty.
Get it in gear. I'm looking at the numbers. I'm looking at, granted, Seth, small sample size, but Kent Emanuel deserves some more innings. That's our hot take. Astros again, noon today. McCullers v. Garrett Cole. Should be a fun regular season game.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it right now. I'm feeling it in this game. I'm feeling an offensive explosion.
They need
for
it.
One. Look, Yuli, who, by the way, like Yankees fans, not that I want to encourage Yankees fans to boo any louder or harder or pat themselves on the back any harder for booing. Not the brightest bunch, because I don't think that most of them even know that Yuli was on the team in 2017.
Yeah, I don't know what these people
have you
know
noticed that? Like, there's almost very sparse booing for Yuli. It's really weird. It's really strange.
I know why the theory. Yeah. Remember in spring training, Yankee fans were booing his brother that played for the Blue Jays?
Yeah.
I think they heard the criticism, and now they're just nervous. They don't know which one it is. They're like,
and they don't want to be branded racists by saying that, like, oh, any Cuban, you figure must have been one of the cheaters.
All these Guriels look alike to me.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
That's understandable. So I feel like Yuli, who's become just a doubles machine, is gonna finally conquer that left field wall for the Yankees and get one over the wall somewhere above the foul, somewhere
so
above
close.
The boundary line there. Yeah.
So close. All right, headlines, shifting gears over to football. Seth, Darren Fells has found a home. Former Texans tight end. This is where we are in the NFL news cycle right now. Sans any Deshaun Watson legal news. Where are former Texans landing? The Detroit Lions have signed former Texan tight end Darren Fells. So Darren Fells, who has not got to experience many wins in the last year or so, really over the course of his career, because he was with the Browns when they were terrible and the Cardinals when they were terrible, had the one good year here in Houston. He is going to go to yet another team where there's probably going to be a lot of losses this year. But I'm glad he has a job, Darren Fells.
I'm happy for him that he gets to play for Dan Campbell.
Yeah!
I'm really intrigued by playing for Dan Campbell and what it must be like. Because I love his shtick. But I also kind of want to see how the players take his shtick if you're losing a bunch of games, particularly if coaching errors are involved in it.
Yeah.
Remember in Miami, I mean, the Texans got the butt end of that scenario when Dan Campbell was the interim coach in Miami. That team got a big boost. Usually I'm skeptical of the interim coach boost, but Dan Campbell lit a fire under them motivationally, and they were on fire for a few games, and then everything settled back down. But they took it to the Texans that year. I wonder if the Lions get a little bit of that boost initially, but then you got to sustain it. And I'm also invested in the Lions because Aaron Glenn, old teammate of mine, and an Aggie, is the defensive coordinator.
And an Aggie. I love how you mix in and an Aggie. Like, that matters to you. And an Aggie.
I'm an Aggie, Sean.
Yeah, right. I forgot.
I've considered taking classes online at Texas A&M. Lopez told me that I can call myself an Aggie because of that.
Because you considered taking classes?
I think he said that as long as I take one class, I can call myself an Aggie.
Okay.
Sean,
have you decided?
I like
which
those
class?
Standards. I like that's my kind of establishment.
That's my kind of school. Well, wait till they come knocking on your door for donations. And then you're going to be like, I only took one class.
I'm basically a junction boy at this point.
Yes.
Hey, I gave it in sweat and blood.
That's hilarious.
I'm not giving any more to the what do we call it? I don't know. To the AM. That's what I'm going to call it. That's what
it's called. 12th man, baby.
When we're talking about, when we speak casually about Texas A&M.
You call it the AM?
Yeah, the AM.
Is that what you say?
Yeah.
Did you see this Juwan James story in Denver where Juwan James, a tackle for the Denver Broncos, who has been on and off injured throughout his career. His career, I believe he started out with the Carolina Panthers. Healthy 1 year, injured the next. Healthy 1 year, injured the next, so on and so forth. He backed out of last year because of COVID, and now he's back, he's back until earlier this week. Tore his Achilles tendon away from the facility. So he's one of these players that's, like a lot of players, working out away from the facility, boycotting workouts in the facility. And I guess, Seth, I mean, I don't know what kind of warning label this whole boycott thing got for guys, but Juwan James might have ruined his contract with this thing. He's going to lose out potentially on a lot of money.
Because he was away from the facility.
If he were in the facility, he would be covered.
Yeah. it's interesting how teams handle this. You know, it depends on who the player is, obviously, a lot of times, how valuable he is. Because if a guy gets injured actually working out for football, you kind of brush that into, like, okay, it's like he got hurt. We'll call it a football injury. And different teams handle it differently. But that's the risk of any injury you get away from the facility, is that it might not be – It might be considered a non-football injury, and that changes all your contractual stuff. Sean, my favorite thing during training camp, every now and then, like the first day of training camp, is when somebody like pulls a hamstring on the first jog of stretch or something, and that's usually somebody that actually injure themselves away from the facility,
and they're
just dragging their ass out to the field somehow, some way, and they make it. Sometimes they'll gut their way through like the first one or two periods. We had a guy in Jacksonville one year who got signed as a street free agent. We had a bunch of injuries on the defensive line, and this kid, God bless him, they signed him. He passed his physical somehow, got out on the field, and because he'd had an injury the year before, and by the third period, we hadn't done anything, no kind of contact or anything. He hadn't, like, gotten injured or anything. By the third period of practice, his knee had swelled up to, like, the size of one of those freakishly large grapefruit you see these days.
Yeah, yeah.
They claim they're not genetically modified, but they totally are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can only guess that that was the first time he had run since his injury, and he had probably got shot up with cortisone just to make it through the physical and to get his – you know, $20,000 signing bonus or whatever it is, and off he went.
Oh man!
And to his credit, I think he felt like he could have done it. He wasn't trying to game the system or anything,
right?
But sometimes guys will pull a hamstring like on the first set of skips across during warmups. Those guys definitely got hurt playing basketball.
Yeah,
and they're just trying to get to the facility.
And you're like elbowing the guy next to you, like, yeah, look at Joe.
This image of like somebody crawling their way in like an injured rat onto the practice field at 6 a.m. before anybody shows up.
That's funny.
Just so he can get injured on the practice field.
That's funny.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.